You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for all the friends of Joyce Barry.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into Joyce Barry and Friends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is joycebarry.com. Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever.
I'm very excited about our show today, and I'm very excited about our guest today, Joel Freeman, a gentleman who is truly an expert on world history and has one of the largest collections of world history paraphernalia than most anyone else, probably anyone else. He is I would say, a master at black history, and he is not black. I love that he loves Israel, and he's not Jewish. In fact, he just returned from taking a group of people on a tour in Israel. He was there when rockets were fired on Israel. Hear firsthand what it's like to hear those warning sirens go off and to fear that your life is in jeopardy. Every missile fired into Israel has a return address. Israel has the right to defend itself and is responding decisively to that address. Israel is using its weapons to protect its citizens. Hamas is using their citizens to protect their weapons. Innocent civilians in Gaza are used as human shields. The bloodshed, the destruction, and the devastation in Gaza fall squarely on the hands of Hamas. Blame Hamas for the killings of these citizens. Blame Hamas for the raging war with Israel. Blame Hamas for placing missiles in and around homes, schools, mosques, and hospitals. They are strategically placing these missiles where they know their citizens will get killed because they want world opinion on their side. Repeat, they want their citizens killed. Hard to believe, but true. Today's show is called Israel, the Truth and Nothing But, and I kid you not, folks, this is true. Hamas knows they cannot beat Israel's military, so they resort to lies, distortion, and propaganda to beat them in the press. They always win over the media because the citizen casualties are focused on heartbreaking pictures while conveniently failing to mention that they tell their citizens to stay put despite repeated warnings from Israel to get out. That area will be targeted next. Hamas will use any means to make Israel look bad, and that includes ensuring its own citizens get killed to protect their missiles. Missiles to be fired into Israel to kill their citizens. Israel does not target citizens. They really try to avoid getting citizens killed by sending warnings via text, emails, phone calls, and pamphlets. Israel is dealing with a vast tunnel of people penetrating right into Israel. They have vast tunnels all over Gaza. And people are sneaking in through those tunnels and aiming, again, at the civilian population. Hamas is a terrorist organization and is one of the worst in the world. Israel is a democracy. Israel is our ally, our friend. Hamas is the enemy. Time to destroy the enemy. And by the way, I believe that Hamas stands for Hamas, H for hate, and AMAS, all members anti-Semitic. So today, folks, we are going to present you with the truth, nothing but, by our friend Joel Freeman. Go ahead, Joel Freeman, and thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Joyce. It is such a pleasure to be with you. And, you know, I've traveled to Israel and to the region a number of times over the years. And I've always been kind of puzzled in terms of why does Hamas want war? And the reason why is because I just think that now I was reading an article by a gentleman who is the head of the Muslim Congress, Canadian Congress in Canada. And he was just basically saying, he says, you know, whatever side of the Arab-Israeli conflict one stands, you can't deny the courage and the perseverance of the Palestinian people, because you know, just look at what has gone on over the years. But he said this. He said Gaza could have become a showcase of Arab enlightenment and enterprise after Israel withdrew from the territory in 2005, and it could have become a tourism haven and a crucible for learning and arts, science, and technology. Instead, Gaza, as he says, has become a one-party Islamic dictatorship under Hamas, dedicated to the destruction of the Jewish state. And he talked about the thousands of precious lives have been lost in this display of hatred disguised as piety. I thought those pretty strong words from a Muslim. And he said it's just not Israeli Jews that have been targeted for death, but Palestinians opposed to Hamas have been massacred to consolidate its power. Because, for instance, in 2007, November, a Hamas gunman fired on a rally organized by the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, Fatah's party, inside a Gaza stadium at an event held to commemorate the late Yasser Arafat. Many were killed, and to the horror of the world, the Hamas gunman butchered Fatah fighters, throwing wounded men from the roof of a 15-story building to their deaths. And here we see in the current clash between Israel and Hamas, there's, the ceasefires really are just times for them to reload and figure things out. And we know that Americans and United Nations will pour in millions of dollars to rebuild the bombed-out infrastructure. But, it's really, who will tell the Palestinians to get off the path of self-destruction? That's what this writer had said. And he also said, who will convince the Palestinian Islamists to try just to stop dreaming of destroying Israel and start to build the future of their own people? And he went on to say, he says, Palestinians must reflect on why, after struggling for 100 years, their dream of statehood remains unfulfilled. And they need to ask themselves, why tiny countries under the occupation of larger foes have become independent nations while Palestinian statehood remains out of reach. And I just think it's, when we stop to think of this, as he was saying, he says, when Palestinians stop chanting for the death of Jews in Israel and start working to secure their own state, they will achieve it. And he said that Palestinians have demonstrated courage and perseverance. What they need now is wisdom. And as one looks back on the different cycles of conflict and violence that have occurred, there is a book by Geoffrey Blainey. And it's called The Causes of War. And he said in this book, he said, politicians start wars optimistic about their prospects of winning. And he said basically that people do not go into war just to think that they're going to lose. Otherwise, they'd avoid fighting. But it's what they can gain from the combat. So if this is true, it just really, you kind of scratch your head and you think, why did Hamas just provoke a war with Israel? Because literally out of nowhere on June 11th, and this was 24 hours before the three Israeli boys were kidnapped, the young teenagers, on June 11th, but on June 12th. But on June 11th, Hamas began launching rockets, and they shattered this a place of calm, and it had been in place since November 2012, and the mystery of this outburst, it prompted David Horowitz, who's the editor of the Times of Israel, to find that the current fighting had no remotely credible reason even to be taking place. And so one looks at it and you say, okay, now why did the Israeli leadership respond minimally and try to avoid combat? Because this, both sides know that Israeli force, that it vastly outmatches Hamas on every domain and any other Arab country. And so you have the intelligence gathering, the command and control, the technology, the firepower, the domination of airspace. Israel has it all. So when you think about this role reversal, yes, the question, are Islamists so fanatical that they don't mind losing? Or are Zionists too worried about the loss of life to fight? Well, actually, I think that, as you alluded to in your opening, that Hamas leaders are quite rational. Because you can look at back in 2006, 2008, 2012, they decide... It's a conscious, cold decision. They decide to make war in Israel knowing full well that they will lose in the military battlefield, but they're very optimistic about winning in the political arena. And so Israeli leaders, conversely, they assume that they will win militarily, but they fear political debate and defeat and bad press, the UN resolutions, and on it goes. And so I just think it's quite interesting that the UN Security Council seems to enjoy nothing so much as condemning Israel. And so the focus on politics, I think, represents a historic shift, because the first 25 years of Israel's existence saw repeated challenges to its existence, especially in the 1948-49 war, the struggle for statehood there at that time, 1967, the Six-Day War, 1973, and no one knew exactly how those wars would turn out. I remember on the first day of the 1967 Six-Day War, when the Egyptians proclaimed that they had these splendid triumphs, while the complete Israeli press was silence. It's just they suggested catastrophe by their silence. But the outside world was unaware of Israeli forces having destroyed Egypt's air force on the ground in 67. And in fact, it was so precise that the Egyptian Air Force had dummy planes set up, and the Israeli intelligence was so pinpoint that they actually did not bomb the dummy planes. They only bombed the real planes and took them out of commission. And so, it came as a shock to learn that Israel had scored one of the greatest victories in the annals of warfare. And the point is, the outcomes were unpredictably decided on the battlefield, but it's no longer, because the battlefield outcomes of Arab-Israeli wars in the last 40 years have been predictable. Everyone knows, as I mentioned and you mentioned, that Israeli forces will prevail. It's more like a kind of a cops and robbers than warfare. And ironically, this lopsidedness turns attention from winning and losing to morality and politics. And Israeli enemies, they provoke it to kill citizens whose death then brings them multiple benefits. And we can see that the four conflicts since 2006 have restored Hamas's tarnished reputation for resistance, but it's built solidarity on the home front. It's stirred dissent among both Arabs and Jews in Israel. It has galvanized the Palestinian and other Muslims to become suicide bombers. It has embarrassed non-Islamist Arab leaders. It's secured new UN resolutions and sanctions bashing Israel. It has inspired Europeans to impose harsher sanctions on Israel and opened the international left spigot of vitriol against the Jewish state. It's also won additional aid from Islamic Republic of Iran. And so the holy grail of political warfare is to win the sympathy of the global left by presenting oneself as an underdog and as a victim. And from a historic point of view, it bears pointing out that this is very strange, because traditionally combatants try to scare the enemy by presenting themselves as fearsome and unstoppable. So this tactic of this new warfare, it includes presenting a convincingly emotional narrative and citing endorsement of famous personalities. You have movie stars and all kinds of people just appealing to the conscience and drawing simple but powerful political cartoons. And so it just becomes something that you have what they call photography, where they have still pictures, some that have been from, let's say, in Syrian conflict, and then using them as images from the Israeli-Gaza conflict. And so it's really sad, it's so sad, how this is happening. It's not well in terms of how Hamas is faring. its battlefield losses since July 8th, now appear higher than expected. There's worldwide condemnation of Israel that has yet to pour in, but it's coming in by trickles, but it's happening. And even the Arabic media, they're relatively quiet at this time. But I think if this pattern holds, hopefully Hamas might conclude that raining rockets on Israeli homes is not such a good idea, and indeed to dissuade it from initiating another assault in a few years, it needs to lose both militarily and also politically, both those two wars, and lose them very badly. But I don't see that is going to happen anytime soon because of the tremendous amount of political goodwill on the side of Hamas and the political negativity toward Israel.
Well, everything you're saying, Joel, is so right on. We really need you on all the television stations across the world to hear the truth and nothing but. And on the heels of all this negative press about Israel, because they're seeing the pictures that are distorted, that don't bother to mention that that's where the rockets are, that's where the tunnels are that'll take you right into Israel to kill innocent people, now there is a wave of anti-Semitism surging up in Europe. I heard in Italy was one country, Germany another. I think there were three that there's been a lot of things going on. It might be Denmark, I'm not quite sure. But the point is, it's just spurring on people who will use any excuse to really target Jews. And it's very scary, it's very frightening. So it's how one thing has a snowball effect on another. And what's coming out on the Palestinian camp, it's lies, it's propaganda. Israel never, ever targets civilians. Israel is sending out leaflets to get out of the area. They're making phone calls. They're sending texts, get out, get out, get out. Hamas is telling them to stay put. Why are they doing that? They want their citizens killed so they could use it in the propaganda war, which they always win because everything is so distorted. So you're absolutely correct, Joel.
Well, I've been thinking about this in terms of the whole Israeli-Gaza situation. And one writer talks about, he likens it to mowing the grass. And I want to hasten to add, I know that the Israeli army has done things that I shake my head at. I know there's two sides to the story. I'm not blind about these things, but I just think it's important for people to step away from the propaganda that comes out and just says, what is the truth here? And I think that Hamas, what happened when they started raining rockets on June 11th, they left Israeli government no choice but to order that Israeli Defense Force, the IDF, had to start a land incursion. And Hamas refused to accept the Israeli government's offer of calm for calm. They rejected the Egyptian ceasefire proposal and violated the humanitarian ceasefire initiated by the UN. And it continued to fire rockets. I mean, I don't know what the count is, over 2,000 probably, toward towns and cities of Israel, hoping to kill as many civilians as possible. And then, of course, the terror tunnels that you mentioned. And I think that Israel's goal continues to be the establishment of a reality in which the Israeli residents can live in safety without this constant indiscriminate terror, while striking a significant blow to their terror structure, to the Hamas's terror structure. So the Israeli government, I think, wisely has defined this limited political and their military goals for this offensive in accordance to what we could call mowing the grass strategy. And I think that the strategy in the 21st century against this hostile non-state type groups such as Hamas or Hezbollah, it reflects the assumption that that Israel finds itself in a protracted, intractable conflict. And the use of force in such a conflict is not intended to attain impossible political goals, but rather it's kind of I guess you could call it a long-term strategy of attrition that's designed primarily to debilitate the enemy's capacity. And only after showing much restraint in its military responses does Israel act forcefully to destroy the capabilities of its foes as much as possible, and hoping that occasionally that they can have these large-scale operations that will only have a temporary deterrent effect in order to create the periods of quiet. For, you know, I've watched these cycles. It's like a year, year and a half of relevant quiet and calm along the Israeli borders. But then, you know, now they have the ground phase of Operation Protective Edge, and as that progresses, Israel has to be realistic about what can be achieved. You know, destroying the tunnels is very important. By the way, Egypt has found, I think, some 17 or 18 tunnels on the Egyptian side, and these are unusually well-constructed tunnels. And so I think that, you know, we have the whole idea in our Western mindset of, you know, let's just have a political solution, but that's totally unrealistic, because you have Hamas, you have the Islamic Jihad. These groups, they see Israel as a theological aberration, and despite reluctant acceptance of temporary ceasefires, they reject any diplomatic course of action intended to solve the whole conflict. So the fanatic commitment to these militias to a radical ideology and to a long-term strategy of violent resistance, it turns a situation into an intractable conflict. And so I just think that what we're going to see, you know, our Western mindset is, can't we resolve it? Can't we all be big, you know, big boys and girls and deal with this thing? But I think in the long haul, you know, that there is no way, I don't think, you know, how we can ask, you know, how is this going to end? And we can use the cliche of cycles of violence. But I think that we're going to continue to have these situations where there's going to be incursions from these different non-state forces. And so against a well-entrenched, implacable non-state enemy like Hamas, you know, Israel simply needs to mow the grass once in a while in order to degrade the enemy capabilities. And I think it's just that war of attrition against Hamas that's probably Israel's fate for a long term. You know, keeping the enemy off balance, reducing its capabilities, and what that requires is the Israeli military readiness and a willingness to use force intermittently, and while maintaining a healthy and resilient Israeli home front despite the protracted conflict.
Joel, I have a couple of questions for you. One, what is your take on Kerry? He kind of sends out mixed messages. Oftentimes he says one thing when he's on national TV, and then oftentimes, like, he had his mic open and he was overheard saying something else. What is your take on Kerry and Obama?
Well, first of all, I'm a registered independent. I am very angry at both political party machines, both the Republican and Democratic Party machines. I just see us running headlong into $17 plus trillion indebtedness. People are just whistling, and nothing seems to be happening on either side. And I think it's going to take a tremendous political upheaval to just say, hey, we need to do things differently if we're going to expect different results. Having said that, I don't see in this administration any semblance of a pro-Israeli approach. And that, to me, is very sad, because when you look at the whole region, Israel is the only friend real ally that we have in the whole region. And to deny that, or to scuttle that, or to be unfriendly toward that alliance, I think is a very wrong-headed approach. And as in any diplomacy, there's the face that you put out, you know, the friendly face, and then what you hear on a hot mic when in an unguarded moment is perhaps what really is being thought and said behind the scenes, and the real attitude. And I tend to think that whatever is said on a hot mic in an unguarded moment is what really is happening in terms of the administration's stance toward Israel, and that saddens me.
Yes, and I agree with you. But people will argue that Israel got the domes, the iron domes, from the U.S. and their funds. That would be the major argument. But I'm picking up, you know, what I read between the lines, that Obama and Kerry are not particularly friendly towards Israel. But how do you answer the part about the contribution of the domes when that's the number one savior of Israel, besides God in heaven doing his part as well?
Well, I think that you have, you know, different, I mean, there's been a long history of friendliness and billions of dollars moving from American taxpayers to Israel for, you know, you have these alliances, and that's a very important alliance traditionally, historically. And so, you know, for the past 6 years, there has been a movement away from that alliance. But it's kind of like moving or turning around a huge ocean-going liner, oil liner, and it takes about 30 miles for that ocean-going liner to turn around and come back to port. And so because you have this these years and decades of friendliness toward Israel, politically it would be not wise for the Democratic Party machine to unfund Israel immediately. But I think that there's, you know, given, you know, the last 6 years, I think we can see the hints and the clues and the cues that that would be something that would we love to be happen, you know, perhaps. And so I think it's just something that the benefit of the Iron Dome technology has been happening, you know, that's billions of dollars have been moving that direction. A tremendous amount of intel and technology has come from America to help create the Iron Dome. And, I mean, I don't know of any other country in the world that would allow more than one rocket to be shot without responding with impunity. And so it just seems so ridiculous to me that anyone would think that Israel wouldn't respond in some way. And thank God there is some kind of an Iron Dome set up. I know I was in Israel a couple of years ago. My wife and I were there with a group, and we were in Jerusalem. We woke up on a next morning after sleeping a fitful, wonderful sleep, and our guide asked us, he said, "Do you know what happened last night?" And we all, you know, groggily said, "No, we don't know what's happened." And he said, "Well, 140 rockets were fired last night by Hamas, and thankfully to the Iron Dome, we are safe. We're all safe, and we weren't even aware of it." And that's really the dichotomy of people living in Israel, is that you have people on the beaches in Haifa, let's say, in Haifa or Tel Aviv, while rockets are being shot and the settlements that are near the Gaza region are under this terror watch. And I remember hearing, I think it was on NPR just the other day, a gentleman who lives in a kibbutz right near Gaza. Every night, he said, I go walking, you know, in a particular area. And yet, I think the night before, there were some Hamas warriors that came out of a tunnel literally in the area where he took a walk every night. He says, I was probably walking over these tunnels, not even realizing it. But he said, and they were shot down by Israeli forces, literally 600 feet away from the kibbutz. And they were armed to the teeth ready to take, to kill, take out anybody that they saw moving, and to bomb, destroy. And that's the people living right near, in the south, in near the Gaza territory, Israelis living there. They're living on a, under a constant threat, but you have the dichotomy of that, of people on the beach up in the northern region, or sailing around on the Sea of Galilee, and you know, it just, that's the dichotomy, and people, Israelis live that every single day, and you can, when you consider a rocket coming over, and you have probably at most a 20 to 30 second response time to get into a bunker, that's pretty incredible for people to live in under that type of situation, and yet they would rather live in Israel than come visit D.C. or Baltimore or some other city where they hear about murder, the murder rate and the mugging rate, the crime rate. You know, they feel more safe and secure in Israel than they would in an American city, let's say.
Yeah, that is really amazing. But as you were speaking, it occurred to me that people might be giving credit to this administration about the Iron Domes, but now I'm realizing that was already there from prior administrations. It's not like Obama just got up the money and immediately had this happen. It's already in place. I was just thinking that, you know, when people might say, well, this administration is pro-Israel, I think it's very subtle that they're not. It's very, very subtle that they're not. I heard an interview with Hillary Clinton this past weekend when she talked about how much she favors Israel. And the only thing that she fights with, and when she was Secretary of State, that she fought with Prime Minister Netanyahu about was the building of settlements. So she said, there are settlements that clearly are on the side of Israel territory. She said, and that's fine. But there are other settlements that are not, and that should go under Palestinian rule or be taken down. And when I heard that, I says, uh-oh, here I was so pro a woman president. Here I was so pro Hillary. And now I really have something to think about and can't wait to see who is running against her. Those settlements to go under Palestinian rule or be totally taken down, that's what she thought. Where are the people that read the Bible and know that it is the promised land, that that land was given to Israel? So I wanted to make that point because I don't believe that John Kerry is a friend of Israel or Obama, but it's very subtle. And who was that other gentleman that got in recently picked by Obama? He's known as someone who favors, that doesn't favor Israel. I can't think of his name right now. He's in a high position. Do you know who it is, Joel? He's in a very high position.
Are you talking about Hagel?
Hagel, that would be it.
Yeah.
Chuck Hagel, is that it?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah, that
I can't
it was all over
name.
The internet where he spoke before groups opposing Israel, and he was handpicked by Obama. And that had the handwriting on the wall right there, right then. So it's very scary that this administration, they are subtle, but clearly they don't favor Israel. And I do see that when it started with the appointment of Hagel, actually. So anything else you want to say about all this, Joe? You articulated so well, I could use you every single day till the war is over.
Well, I just think it's, you know, we have a Western mindset, of a solution-oriented mindset, and, you know, why can't they fix it? You know, it just sounds so rational, reasonable, can't you see it? And I just think this is, I think we need to recalibrate our expectations regarding the Middle East situation between Gaza, Hamas, and Israel. And it's not going to change anytime soon. I think it's about 35% of the Palestinian population in Gaza, a very young population, by the way, supports Hamas. And so when you have those kind of numbers, and who knows how that poll was done or how that number was arrived, how they arrived at that number, but that's still a significant part of the population, and I'm sure it's people have to lend their support of a terror group like Hamas, a non-state terror group, or they'll be killed themselves. So it's a very, very, very tenuous situation that I do not see happening, anything good happening anytime soon. Because the whole purpose of Hamas is to destroy Israel. That's the way it is.
It's in their charter not to recognize Israel's right to exist. When Arafat was in power, I remember at Camp David, they were so close to coming up with some sort of peace agreement and a two-state solution when Clinton was officiating at that. And then all they did, they were so close. Right after that fell apart, it just went further and further away from that.
Yes. Yep. Very sad.
Do you remember
those
days?
Sad. I do remember those.
Joe, some might think you're Jewish because Freeman does sound like a Jewish name. Given you're not Jewish, why is Israel important to you? Why is it that you appreciate Israel? Why is it that you try to get there every year and take a tour group with you? What is the reason for you? What drives you?
Well, personally, I am a follower of Yeshua. I am one who I've studied and read the Bible. I left home when I was 17, hitchhiked all around North America, long-haired hippie, dope-smoking fool. I had a conversion experience in 1972. And what happened is the more I studied the Bible, the more I realized that the land and the people are important. Whether or not one agrees or disagrees with God's decision. And I know that the people blew it time and time again. It's like this cycle, corkscrew cycle through the book of Judges. It's not a pretty sight. And it just, the disobedience and everything else. But still, there was a point where he said, I've not given my bill of divorcement. I still love, unconditionally love, the land, the people, and the land, the promises that were given. And with Abraham, the promises were given in two different levels. Number one, it was to Abraham, do you see the stars in the sky? What is the number of them? And he said, they're numberless. What about the dust of the earth or the sand, bits of sand on the seashore? That, again, is numberless. And so I think the dust speaks of the people of Israel after the flesh, if you will, with the DNA. And then we have the stars speak of the people of Israel after promise. There's a promise in the New Testament. And so I don't see, what I see there is that there's nothing has changed in God's mind toward the land and toward the people. And so it's, I think it's, wrong-headed from a theological standpoint to look at what some call replacement theology. I know the Presbyterian Church has taken stances against Israel. It's because they believe that the church has replaced Israel, and all the promises to the church or to Israel have been now come over to the church. I don't agree with that. I think that the promises are specific, and I do agree that a new covenant has been made that is included, but just like the whole principle of grafting, you have to have the host tree in order to graft a branch into that tree. And so I just think that anyone who tries to say that the graft is the host tree now is wrong. It's a wrong-headed view. And so I just think it's a wonderful plan. It's a wonderful picture of God's nature, His kindness, and His desire to express a covenant. In fact, in the Old Testament, there are eight covenants, and four of them are unconditional, and four of them are conditional. In other words, it's preceded with the word if. If you do such and such, then I will do such and such. But four of the unconditional covenants are basically saying, this is what I'm going to do, and I don't care how you act or react, how you disobey, doesn't matter. I am keeping my word about this. And with Abraham, that was an unconditional covenant. Abraham was not even a Jew. God made a nation out of him that he called the Jews, the light to the Gentiles. And, of course, as I said, as I inferred before, and it was blown. The opportunities were blown many times. I look even at the land of Israel. And one of the things that I've been so intrigued as I've visited the land many times and studied about the topography and the geography is that you have the one of the most important trade routes coming through Israel, the Via Maris. In fact, whoever controlled Megiddo would control the trade route, which started in the Fertile Crescent, came all the way down and around to Egypt through Megiddo. And this trade route, you have the Silk Road in Asia. This is a major trade route in this whole region. And so I just think of plopping Israel in this area where they didn't necessarily have to go out to the nations and proselytize. They could just be where they were and the nations would come to them and through this trade route. And so it's pretty fascinating to me that even the location of the land. And I love the land. I love visiting Israel. I love the people. And because I believe that this is God's heart and his desire, his expression that has not changed since the days of Abraham.
We'll come back to you in a moment. We want to hear all about your most recent tour and about the land and the people and all of that as well. Folks, I really want to thank you for listening today, Israel, the Truth and Nothing But, with our esteemed guest, Joel Freeman. I urge you to go into our archives and listen to our show yesterday on extraordinary Jews and contributions of the Jewish people. You'll hear about people of Jewish descent that won the Nobel Prize, that had major contributions to fight illness, major contributions in so many other areas, contributions that came out of Israel. That was our show yesterday, so I urge you to listen to that. On Friday, we have a wonderful show with Rabbi Potasnik about praying for the peace of Israel and praying for world peace. So along with this extraordinary show today with our fantastic guest, Joel Freeman, we really give you reason to listen to us every day. And here's more reasons why in the words of Beverly Nadler.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, please join along with us in having that happen, making Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show worldwide. Simply go to Joyce, Barry, Barrie, and Friends.com. www.thebetterself.com, and on the upper left, right under my picture, it says follow. Click on that, and you will get an email from Blog Talk Radio each day about our show, about our guests, about our topics, so you know exactly what we're up to. And for those of you that can't listen in at 9 o'clock Eastern, we are happy to say that every single show is in our archives, every one. And the moment we go off the air, this one will be there as well, and we don't take our shows out of archives. So once again, please listen to the show yesterday, Extraordinary Jews, Extraordinary Jewish Contributions. No doubt you'll be really surprised at some superstars that are Jewish that you wouldn't think that, like a Tony Curtis, for example, stars that change their names to get theatrical names. But more importantly than the stars and the comedians and all of that, with their contributions was literally contributions that save lives, that impact technology. So before we move forward with Joel Freeman, let me share with you who he is. He's the president of the Freeman Institute. He has extraordinary books like Dealing with People Who Drive You Crazy. We're certainly having a taste of that with dealing with Hamas, so that book might be a good starting place for the people in our lives that drive us crazy. His books are really extraordinary. He has some really interesting websites like black101.com. It's his Black History collection. So that's like really amazing. You could go to his main website, which is Freeman, F-R-E-E-M-A-N Institute. com. Latest book is Work Hard, Work Smart, and that has its own website, workhardworksmart.com. So you really want to look into this extraordinary guest today. My only issue with Joel Freeman is I can't have him more often on our show. He has If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand. I have that book, and it's awesome. Everything, every word out of Joel's mouth, whether in writing or whether articulated, is really amazing. So I'm so grateful to have you as a guest, Joel Freeman. Why don't you talk about the tour that you took people on in Israel, and I know you strive to do that each and every year. What was that like, and was there, in fact, a time when there were rockets going off right within distance of hearing it or seeing it?
Yes, I do try to take a group every year. If someone goes to IsraelCrazy.com, they'll see that the next tour, we pushed it back from March 2015 to October-November 2015, and the reason being because of some of the things that are happening right now and people thinking about going. Probably March time frame, things are going to be peaceful, relatively calm, and just wonderful for any tourist group to go and visit for 10 days. And that's ironic because now when people are making the choices to go and committing down payments and things like that to go on these trips, it's a difficult decision because you have so many friends and relatives saying, you're crazy, you're nuts, you're cuckoo. If you're going to Israel, you're not going, we're not going to let you go. And so it's kind of an odd situation. So I deliberately pushed it back to October, November of 2015, hoping that come around next January, things will be peaceful enough that people will be able to make an informed decision to go to Israel later that year. But
before you go on, excuse me one second, just before you go on and talk about your extraordinary experiences, I have to put you on with Janice Miller in the studio lines, because literally her two sons are supposed to be leaving for Israel, both her sons, I believe within 2 weeks. Is that correct, Janice?
Yes, it is. My both sons are supposed to go on a plane to Israel by the rite of passage. Both sons, my only two sons, on the same plane going to Israel. Not a good picture for my mind and sleepless nights ahead. So what are your thoughts?
Well, what region of Israel are they going to be going to?
Well, of course, they've been told by the Israelis that they will be brought to the safer side, I guess the northern side, from what you said was the safer region. and they are keeping track with everybody online. Other people that are currently there said everything's fine. So that's the peace of mind I get. And I feel, you know, I've talked to some people from Joyce's show that have psychic abilities that said they will, no matter what, they feel that the trip will be postponed, and then that they will have an adventure of their lifetime. So I'm thinking, well, maybe your tour would be even better.
Well, I think it's wonderful they're going to Israel. Personally, I would not take a group right now. It's because I err on the side of great caution. You know, I've personally traveled to well over 50 plus countries all around the world, and I've been in some pretty unsettled situations. I'll just leave it at that. And I don't mind walking into tough situations, but when I take a group, I am ultra careful, conservative, cautious, and I do have boots on the ground. I have a dear friend who was the former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations. And these are the people I keep in touch with before I go, and of course the State Department and other individuals I have in Israel. But if they're getting the go-ahead sign, and you have friends, boots on the ground there that are saying it's okay, and they're being careful about where they go, I would just say, you know, I believe they'll be safe, and things will be, as long as they're not hitchhiking on the West Bank or, you know, doing things that are crazy, and stick with the group, I think they should be okay.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I still, you know, think we could pick a better time. It's just that my son,
yes,
being part Jewish, they have this website called Rite to Passage. And mm-hmm. So my older son is 26, and this is his last year to go on this trip.
Yes.
And so he's kind of like, well, I don't want to give up the trip. I said, you know, Gianni, you could pay for this trip instead of going on the trip where you may not come back. So I didn't want to put the guilt trip as a Jewish mother, but, you know, that is the way I think.
That goes with the territory, though,
yeah.
Being a Jewish mother. Okay, Janice, thank you so much. I want to take the rest of the time to hear about his tour and Joel, how you perceived Israel and what it's like to be there and the people and all of that. Thank you, Janice.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it, Joel.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead,
Joyce. It's to me, going to Israel is every time before going, because it's so much work putting a trip together, I say I'm never doing this again. It's too much work. But once I get to Israel and I see the lights go on in people's eyes and I see them, people have tears in their eyes. It's just amazing the kind of responses I get from people when they actually see a sight that is that they've read about in the Bible or heard about. And, I try to keep groups small, because relatively speaking, to fit on one bus, because I view the larger groups that go, with two or three bus loads as kind of like cattle calls. It's just hard to connect with everybody, and I really like the ambiance, the attitude, the sense of humor, the connecting, the bonding, the lifelong friendships that emerge from the trips. And so we do different things early on in the trip to help build relationships and trust and intimacy with the group. And and plus, with a smaller group, it makes you that much more nimble, because I try to factor in at least two, sometimes three surprises for people that are kind of off the itinerary, that just kind of blow people's minds. Like last year, we went to an army camp. The guide, he went to school with the commander of the camp, the base, I should say, right, literally 100 meters from the Lebanon border. And so we were able to talk with Israeli soldiers. We had one soldier that had come from Washington State who came and joined the Israel Army. And he said, I just feel like I could have joined the United States Army, and that would have been a great experience. But I just felt like I was really participating in something meaningful. I wasn't off in some other country, you know, trying to do something in Afghanistan or something. I was in Israel. He says, here I am 100 meters away from the Lebanon border. I feel like I'm doing something that is important, and I'm needed here. And so anyway, just to talk with people like that, people came away from that experience just shaking their heads saying, my goodness, the dedication of the soldiers. I know the first time I went to Israel, my oldest son and I were there, and we just rented a car. We traveled all over places that I'm sure today you could never go to as a tourist. But we picked up hitchhikers. We picked up Bedouins, Arabs. We picked up Israeli army, you know, young men, young women. Just had an incredible time talking with people. And that's the kind of atmosphere. So what we do in our trips is go up to the northern region first for 3 or 4 days, then go all the way down to the south, to Masada, to En Gedi, to Qumran, some of my favorite places. I love the desert region around Dead Sea and beyond. And then the rest of the time in Jerusalem. Up in the north, we're on the Sea of Galilee. We go to Capernaum. We go to Banyas, you know, right at the base of Mount Hermon. Sometimes we go up past the Druze settlement to go on the border of Syria. Oh, it's just fascinating. I remember 2 years ago, three trips ago, we had a snowball fight up in on the border of Syria, and then later that day we were in short pants down in the Dead Sea. And it's just incredible diversity in terms of weather and everything. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And people, it makes the Bible jump alive, really. A trip to Israel makes the Bible jump alive, and it just is a life-transforming experience for anyone.
I know when I went to Israel, and this is many years ago, they were not under siege at the time. There wasn't a war at the time. I chose that as my vacation. And I know just getting off the plane into Israel, I just kissed the ground where I was. Mm. I never felt so blessed in such a sacred place. And then certainly when I went to the Wailing Wall, I think they might call it the Eastern Wall as well. Is that correct?
The Western Wall.
The Western Wall.
Okay. Yeah.
I wasn't sure. That's why I said the Western Wall, otherwise known as the Wailing Wall. And the wall has countless notes in every crevice of the wall. And I came with three notes. I had it already written out and done. And I put one on the left side, one in the middle, and one on the right side. I said, wow, if any way I can get a note to God, this wall is the place to do that. So I had one on each side and one in the center, but I never felt in like such a sacred place and feeling so blessed. And I had interesting experiences in Israel. And again, there was nothing going on in terms of any kind of fighting of any kind. But the thing that struck me was going to the movies one evening, and they have a table in the lobby leading into the theater, and they asked me to remove what was in my purse, to look through my purse, and I just smiled and said, I'm one of yours. I'm not a terrorist. I'm on your side. But and I bring that up now for a reason, because Denise was talking about timing in Israel, and I agree that it is kind of scary. No one could dispute that. But here, in times of peace, they went through my purse. So the security precautions they take all the time, every day, is pretty amazing. And everyone will tell you, people in the know, that their airline security is the best in the world. I believe there might have been one incident with a plane in all of their history. One time, one incident in all of their history. That's how extraordinary the security is. Joe, I could talk to you all day, but I know you're a man on the move and you're always so busy. We're so blessed that you took time for us today. What would you like to say in closing?
Well, I just think, you know, first of all, I think it's important to realize this is a long process, intractable in many ways in terms of the Middle East situation. I think that every year and a half or so, we're going to have situations like we're experiencing now between Gaza and Hamas and Israel, amongst in that particular region. And I think that I'm thankful for the Iron Dome, and but I just think it's important to realize that this is a very tenuous situation. We need to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, as the Bible says. And I want to encourage everyone, whether they go with our group or any other group, to go to Israel to visit at least once. Put it on your bucket list and plan to do it. It is a wonderful, eye-opening experience, and I just think it's important to do that at least once. And by the way, the first time a person goes, it is just like living life in the fast lane. Everything's happening so quickly, and one's head is snapping around, looking here, not wanting to miss anything. And the second time you go, it goes into slow motion. You say, okay, I've been here before. I've been here to the Western Wall. Now I want to really drill down. I really want to focus on specific things. And every year, every time you go back to Israel, it gets even slower, more specific. You learn more. It took me, I'd say, 3 or 4 trips for me to even begin to make sense of certain historical things, that events that happened, and the way that the Temple Mount. It took me 3 or 4 times to really get it. And I'm not saying anyone has to go 3 or 4 or 5 times to Israel, but I'm just saying from personal experience, the more times you go, the more it just impacts your life on with subtleties and nuances that you never thought you could learn.
I totally agree with you, because I was in awe of everything. I couldn't take in enough. There was just so much. The infrastructure, the modernization of everything, how incredible the people were. They do love and appreciate Americans. So it is something that should be on your bucket list and whatever other list you have. I just want to acknowledge, I see a new person in our chat room, Lion 021. Never saw you in the chat room before, so welcome. Appreciate having you there. And I was remiss in opening up the chat room today. I didn't open it at the usual time. We had some technical issues, so I opened it kind of late, and there you are. So thank you for being there. And if you want to put a note in the chat room how you found out about us, but most importantly, know that you can hear the show in its entirety in our archives, Israel, the Truth and Nothing But. So welcome to our chat room. I always like to personally acknowledge the new people. I'm always back and forth in the chat room. To Joel, I just want to say thank you so much. We're always grateful when you do our shows about Israel, when you do our shows about Black history. You are so articulate. The world needs more people like Joel Freeman, so we are indeed very, very grateful. To all of you, we invite you to listen to our show yesterday on Extraordinary Jews, on Extraordinary Jewish Contributions. On Friday, Rabbi Potasnik, let us pray for Israel, let us pray for world peace as well. So we really invite you to listen to the Truth and Nothing But, and whatever you can do to make a difference in your own lives, in the lives of your friends, to support Israel, to support anyone anywhere in the world that would really appreciate and could use your support, please do that. yet. So let us go out and celebrate world peace. Let's pray for it. Let's celebrate it. Let's celebrate each other. Let's celebrate miracles that will surely come your way if only you believe in them and are open to receiving them. Here is our celebration song.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again, as Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Have a fantastic day and listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.
Insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
Hardship. My grandmother would go through it every month to pay her insurance bill. First, she would handwrite a paper check, in cursive. Then, using her own tongue, she would wet a stamp for an envelope. Today, however, we need not weary our hands and tongues. Today, we can pay our GEICO bill with the GEICO app. Away with hardship, in with bill pay on the GEICO app. Thank you.